In our latest Create conversation, we spoke with Frank Klein, CEO and co-founder of Asian Box, Adam Schlegel, founder of Chook, and Elizabeth Nicholson, Chief Operating Officer of Chook. In this conversation, filmed in Denver during Create, the three restaurateurs spoke about the logistics of running a restaurant, including dispersing tipped wages, the difficulty of running a restaurant in California, expansion possibilities, a four-day work week, and much more. Be sure to check out our other Create conversations, which include an episode of Takeaway with Sam Okus that featured four restaurant leaders discussing their struggles with labor, supply chain, and more, a Create conversation between three industry CEOs on an episode of Extra Serving, and another episode of Extra Serving with Maria Empanada's founder, where she took on the restaurant industry. Plus, if you're in Washington, D.C., join us for the Create Roadshow October 17th from 6 to 9 at Chaya Taco's Chinatown location for free drinks and an educational panel, as well as a chance to network with your industry peers. RSVP at the link in our show notes. And now, here's the interview.
Okay. My name is Frank Klein, founder of West Coast 15-unit brand Asian Box, and now developing post-punk hospitality, which is ideating and creating brands for different investment groups.
I'm Elizabeth Nicholson. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Chook Charcoal Chicken, and I will let Adam give the Chook intro.
Sure. My name is Adam Schlegel. I'm the owner of Chook. Actually, I usually just go with Chook these days. So many words in there. Chook is, we're four restaurants right now. We are a quick casual rotisserie chicken shop. So Chook really had its origins from my wife, who's Australian, and we spent a lot of time down there. Neighborhood chicken shops abound. When we moved back to the States, she put the bug into my ear of why we don't have these little rotisserie chicken shops in our neighborhoods where we get fresh salads and sides and deliciousness. I was able to sucker in Alex Seidel, James Beard award-winning chef, to join in this adventure, and we are on an adventure.
I think it's really cool. I started following you when you launched your first store in the media, and I'm glad you have four stores now.
Thank you.
I mean, did you open any during the pandemic, or was it all before the pandemic or post-pandemic?
It feels like everything is pandemic.
It was timing, right?
Yeah. You know, it was kind of weird because, like, obviously the pandemic hit and the world collapsed. And then there was like glimmers of like hope that merged. And so we signed leases and those slivers came
absolutely
back, because
yeah,
you're like, oh, okay,
yeah,
we're right back out of it. And then you're like, oh, nope. We slid back into one. So we opened two during the pandemic. We had our two shops, one that actually literally just opened like right before it. So we've really known a pandemic world, but you know, what we really are is that we're a takeaway restaurant, you
sure
know, and that really was our goal from day one. And so
limited footprint, a lot of takeaway.
Yeah. And so in a way it helped. Originally, I actually think people thought this was a neighborhood like James Beard award winning bistro, and COVID was just like, oh, this food's great to actually take away. And so I still won't give COVID any credit for anything, but it did at least teach some things.
I think smarter operators came out of COVID more prepared, and I think that people that didn't are giving real estate to people like you. You know, it's what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of creativity that came into it of how can we provide the same food, provide the same service, or change kind of how we provide service so that people still do get a really good experience, even if it's just they place their order at home, literally come into our store for 30 seconds and pick up food and take it home. Like, how can we have that holistic experience from our kitchens to their dining room tables?
Sure. I mean, at Asian Box now, you know, we just got in the San Francisco airport, which is doing really well for us. But over time, we're going into our 11th year. Over time, we've done very little modifications to our menu except for seasonal specialties and adding LTOs, because I think we had a really good chef. He used to work with Charles Fan, Gracie Nguyen, as one of the founding partners, a fantastic chef. And all the recipes kind of remain the throughout the thread of our menus over the 10 years. Did you guys have an evolution of your menus? One of the things I love about your concept is the simplicity of the menu and how you can nail the culinary aspects of it. Did you do any right or left turns after you opened?
We really haven't for a great deal of it. I mean, we've had some offerings that we have taken off, but so much of the way that we've engineered our menu is this concept of like limiting food waste, so utilizing as much of ingredients mm-hmm. as possible and weaving that through the whole menu. So we do bring on seasonal items depending on spring, summer, fall, winter, but for the most part our menu has stayed very strong, and people know to come to us for chicken and mac and cheese and vegetables and salads. And, you know, if we take something off, we typically hear about it from our guests.
Well, that's good.
I would say, though, that, like, to that, the thing that we have changed the most is how we do it.
Yeah.
Like, the functionality of it,
sure.
And that's the thing
sure.
that, you know, I'm trying to learn from you and everyone else is just, like, the actual overall operations, the
mm-hmm.
flow of it. You know, a lot of this was built with stations and with pantry stations and with all these traditional, almost fine dining elements. And we need our food to be fast and ready and affordable and all of those kind of components. So that overall operations, like, we spend more time tinkering on that, from like how we actually cook our chicken to how we get all these plates out. That's where all of our focus is, because, like, thank God, Alex is just a genius with food, and so
well,
it's all good.
It's efficient. But, like you said, efficiency in menu is so important nowadays because it's sustainable. You have less ingredients in. The less ingredients, the less problems with supply chains, less problems with the training of labor, the more you can maybe automate some stuff in the back of the house. I mean, certainly an Asian Box, like, we run a very tight 8 or 9 man team depending on the volume.
Right.
And, you know, there's an extreme back of the house kitchen, middle of the house, which is the engine that puts the food out, and then the hospitality sector. And the current CEO, Chuck Imerson, who's been with us for 9 years as the COO, and then he was elevated to the CEO by the board last year, has done a phenomenal job of looking at our kitchen without the founders in his ear. And he's retooled some of the things in our flagship store in Palo Alto, which almost is 4 million out of 913 square feet. He just added like a double layer stack
right.
of expediting, and the staff is, you know, hailing him because he was such a good eye that he had to do that.
They were spurning him, but then they hailed him, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, yeah, that store is a high volume. We do a lot of catering before we open, and we don't produce any catering between 11 to 2 because we're just too busy at the lunch rush and between 5 and 8 at dinner. But my point was is that he kind of efficiently looked at the system, again, without the founders in his ear, like, hey, we created this, don't change it. Without us in his ear, he created like a double shelf stacked where the employees were more efficient without having to move any more steps. And just, you know, the same amount of hands, but a little bit more productivity. So have you guys, I think that you were alluding to that you saw some openings in trying to tighten.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have, even just in like, what kind of equipment can we use and install and implement that makes our staff's life a little bit easier? Because obviously, across the board, restaurants are short-staffed. And so it really is about like the people that you have making their experience really great while they're here so that we can retain them, train them better. We need less people when we have a well-trained staff. So we've looked a lot at equipment and also just supply chain, like where are we getting stuff from?
Sure.
Are there products that still have that integrity that we can make the same good food with?
How do you balance that though? I mean, you've got Post Punks, you're working at some
uh-huh.
of these like growing brands. This is something I feel like every restaurateur I talk to beats their head up. Like, you start off a restaurant, so you're a bit of this like artistry, this founder philosophy,
sure.
and it's really not mature for a market. And
sure.
so how do you find that operation specialist? Is it an internal? Is it a consultant? Is it a collaboration with investment partners? But where do people find that? Because so many, I think, really good ideas just flounder because they couldn't actually figure out
That's a really good point. You have to have a support staff, and you have to take the right investors on. So if you don't have, you know, first money in should really be used in building a team, because to expand a concept, you really need people that are either real estate advisors or real estate advisors and site selection, and because that's so important. I think site selection, poor site selection, damages brands. And I think with Asian Box, we stumbled a little bit right before the pandemic and trying to grow too fast and picking some locations that, even though there was consensus, maybe there was some gut check. If we had another month to think about it, we wouldn't
sure.
have done it. And I think that as growing brands look at it, it's grow slow. And pandemic taught us have cash in your back pocket at all times. But it's a really good point because you have to have that team. And where do you get it from? Your investment group. I mean, angel investors are your family and friends that potentially give you money to get your first couple stores open. They may not be the best sounding boards of how to grow a fast casual brand.
Chances are they aren't.
And more people do it wrong than do it right.
Yep.
And, you know, it's your job to make the store as efficient as possible. And then as you start to grow, you do have to bring seasoned people on. Either on a board of advisors, like Asian Box, we early on had a board of advisors that was Russ Bendel, who was the CEO of Habit Burger. People like Alice Elliott, who knew the whole scape and and our attorney, Roddy Lagesson, and Cliff DeGroote from Davis Wright Tremaine, they gave us a network of people.
Right.
And I'll make this last point real quick, is that I was asked this question the other day in an interview, like, what would you tell, like, in sustainability or efficiency, what would you tell young entrepreneurs? I would say, talk to your peers. Talk to people that are using sustainable packaging and know sustainable kitchen practices. Talk to people that are using similar products. Talk to people that are in your vein, because most people are willing to help each other. And I think people don't reach out enough.
I agree.
And I think if people reached out more, they would not step in shit as much as they do. We certainly step in shit a lot. Step in shit every day.
Well, I mean, I was talking to our Snooze CEO the other day, and we were at actually an Alice event, and I was like looking across the room and this starstruck at everyone here, and I'm like, nobody actually knows this rule book right now. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't matter the seasoned veterans that are around here. These past 2 years, like, this is a different rule book than when we started Chuck. Mm-hmm. And so how are we finding out these, like, new solutions? And so much of it is it's a network, and it's being able to do it. We're like, we're all in the same war. So we're willing to do it, because at the end of the day, like, we all believe in what we do. We believe in food. We believe in service and hospitality. And if we have that, and there's not maybe a direct competition line, we do. We want to see it succeed. These are great success stories if they work.
I think we almost have the same why everyone is. Great food plus great hospitality at an affordable price point. Yep. That is the fine craft, quick casual game.
Yep.
And as long as you do that, and then your second level of why is how, is the treatment of your staff, making sure that your staff is sustainable. I talk about sustainability in 20 different ways, whether it's profitability, whether it's earth friendly, or whether it's your staff. There's ways to make your staff more sustainable,
yep,
which is sticking around, because it costs way too much to train new people. And the more repetitive kind of business that we have, where we're cooking food repetitively, we're ordering it, and it's fast natured, turnover really can damage that customer relation and that hospitality factor, because it's not consistent.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this is a conversation that Adam and I have on occasion of how do we maybe take learnings not from other restaurant folk, but other corporate people, industry people, mm-hmm, that we know, for how they treat their staff, and
sure,
what kind of benefits can we now provide to our staff that maybe aren't typical for the restaurant industry, but will build that retention, will build that, we call them peeps in our chicken store, but we'll build
that. I love that.
Peep experience.
Damn it, I love that. It's a great one. You know, yeah, when we opened up Asian Box, we wanted to get, we're right around by a lot of the, we never had, maybe had one Stanford University student work for us, because Stanford used to do anything, they didn't need to work or they don't have time to work.
Right.
So we went after the high school students. And the way we went after the high school students was, the first perk we offered was, we'll pay your cell phone bill. And I still have the emails on my wall office from parents saying, thank you very much, but do I have the right to take it away if they abuse the privilege? So, like, back then it was like, you know, $39-$49 a month. And we felt like literally that is like pennies for every hour they work. And but it was so meaningful. It was something at that point. It was like, damn, I don't have to fight with my parents about it. I'm working and I get something in return. So we thought the lesson learned there was really fantastic. And then we also had, you know, 9-10 years ago, we had just I don't feel like a day or mental health days, where if you just didn't really want to come to work and weren't going to be a benefit to your teammates and what's going to be a benefit to the hospitality center that we were trying to create, we just wanted like a 6-hour notice or a 4-hour notice. You get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you're insomniac, you can't get sleep, just text and say, you know what, I'm calling it. I'm not coming in today. And then we'd be able to find somebody or do something else. So I think those important things that like come from other industries,
yeah,
that are really important other than just hourly wages and tips. Well, let me ask you something. Do you guys, because at Asian Box, we have a long-standing policy, we don't do tips because we want people to be repetitive customers.
Yeah.
I am not a fan of switching over the POS machine, I'm sorry for doing this, and adding a tip, because I was over tip. I spent $10, I get $5. That's just me. So I'd save a lot of money if it didn't work that way. But how do you guys do that right now with the compensation and tips and the legalities and the regulations and the whole bullshit that is the scape of tips?
Yeah, I mean, from day one, we have been doing a tip pool system. So I know, mm-hmm, a lot of restaurants switched over to that in the pandemic. And that was really coming out of this one house mentality that we, mm-hmm, wanted to build. Front of house, heart of house, everyone,
sure,
gets paid the same. We've fiddled over and over with what that right percentage prompts are. And
so it's not even Steven, it's not divided by hours worked in or anything?
We do divide it, but for the guests, the,
okay,
the percentage prompts that we give the,
okay,
guests. And when we bring it down, we hear from people that they want to be able to tip our teams more and more.
Mm-hmm.
So for now, we've been keeping it, and it's been a good way for us to pay really competitive wages to our teams.
Sure.
But I think there is, across the industry, a much larger conversation about service charges, or do we just increase the price of food so that it's all-inclusive and we make sure that you can take care of your team?
So just to clarify, if you don't mind answering, so are you taking all the tips out of the computer and then putting it on people's paychecks, or distributing it at the end of the day, or how does it work?
End of week, yep. Yeah, we do week over week for the hours worked that week.
And sure.
There are a couple, you know, shift leads, key holders that get a slightly larger percentage of the typical. Mm-hmm. Which makes a really big impact for those folks, but doesn't necessarily take that much money out of anyone else's pockets.
Well, how have you felt? I felt when we opened up our restaurants, the first ones, it was Obama's race to 15, because I do believe he politicized a little bit and tried to push it to 15 for just for fast food workers. Not if you worked at a drugstore, not if you worked at a gas station, but just for some reason, fast food workers. And so we were always paying more than that. And then we always tried to raise the bar. But now I think it's like the push to 25. Like, how are you guys dealing with anybody can look at you and say, I can go make $2 more across the street and just change my uniform in 5 minutes and I've got a job. How are you dealing with that?
I mean, it's been really tough. And I think it comes down to like the environment that we're creating at work and having our managers, you know, have a really good team morale and energy. And that's something that I think has been the hardest thing for us to do over the past 2 years is like when we're drained, when we're all feeling run down and stretched a little bit, then how do we keep the fun of a restaurant? Because we lost it for a little bit there.
Yeah.
And we have to figure out ways to build it back. But, you know, I just ran into one of my old line cooks who's now managing another kitchen. And like, he's still connected with his team. He's still chatting with his teammates. And I think that that kind of speaks to that family feel that we're really hoping to have at Chuck.
I think you're right. That's the retention. Hey, listen, if somebody's going to offer somebody more money and it's that meaningful, then God bless them. But go take care of your family. You have to have a business model and you have to stick to it. And nowadays, with all the legalities and all the problems, you can't really start doing non-equitable pay for different people in different positions. You have to kind of keep your pay rates right. So you can't just say, okay, Susie, come on over here. I'm going to pay you $3 more an hour so you don't leave. It doesn't work that way anymore. Maybe it did back in the 20 years ago, 15 years ago. And it shouldn't work that way. But I do think it's the culture. I mean, at Asian Box, our average general managers, and this is really a testament to Chuck, our new CEO, who was the COO, we have a tenure of almost 5 years in 9 stores general managers. And our loss rate last year was only 15% of line staff. So, like,
what do you attribute that to?
I think, I hate to use the word culture, but it is culture, and it's our policies and procedures and the respectful way we treat the staff, but also it's just, I think we've created a system that's very efficient, and there's a lot less what we call grab-assery in the business. It's like everybody's working at all times. So we have a leaner team that has less idle time, and we pay them more, and we treat them well, and we pay weekly, and it keeps everything going a lot cleaner and a lot more transparent. And like we said, we have those mentalities. We've always had them. Like, people have always known. Listen, if you say you just can't come into work today, whatever, it's a car repair or a dog sick, whatever it is, you know, if you do it once every couple of months, who cares? It's better for you. If you just need to take off a Friday because you need to split for the weekend with your new fiance, lover, partner, whoever, oh, by all means, do it. And then it comes back to you, because I think that people do want to stick around. And I just feel that it's really important to not only financially incentivize people, but also the other things that you talked about, where we learned, because we're in Silicon Valley with some of our flagship stores, and we learned from other industries and other startups, like, how are you trying to retain people and what are you doing that isn't just so blatant paying off?
It's true, but I do think, you know, the responsible thing is to forecast forward for what those new pay rates are going to be.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, the 22, 25 is inevitable. I really question whether a tip credit will even be around in the next 4 or 5 years, which I think will have an incredible ripple effect for a lot of, you know, a lot of states that still hold it pretty dear. And so I do think no matter what, compensation still is paramount. And we really are going to have to figure out both how we compensate more, because quite frankly, we actually probably haven't. We haven't compensated to a just way that it should be. But conversely, to not continue to skyrocket our prices, it is going to be those operations. It is going to be those like efficiencies. So just like you're saying, like, how can I do more with less?
Mm-hmm.
How and then how do I incentivize those folks? So if I'm able to have a one staff reduction, do I take a full one staff reduction back to my bottom line, or am I actually allocating 50, 80% of this to actually keep that? Because again, there's nothing works better than long-term long-term people.
Yeah, and nothing cures anything better than volume.
Yep.
You know, Russ Mundell from the Habit Burger used to always tell me, he goes, Frank, when people are bitching about other things, he goes, volume cures all ills, is what he used to tell me. And I just hear it every single time. I mean, it's tough. I mean, we're in the vortex right now. The prices are the highest they're ever. Packaging is crazy.
Yeah.
And labor's going up. California just voted to arbitrarily say that fast food workers need to make $22. And again, I go back to it. It's not the people at CVS. It's not the people at the gas station. It's not the people at other things. And I keep on repeating that, not as a political statement, but more of like, what the hell? I mean, like, why are you focused on this one thing? Like, you're almost like discriminating against these people, saying that this one class of fast food worker or whatever can't take care of themselves like somebody else in a different industry. It's bizarre to me. I don't disagree with the $22. I just disagree with the approach that they're taking. Our average wage at Asian Box right now is $22 in California.
Yep.
And all of our stores are in California. But I just
from a compensation standpoint, I know certainly in Denver, rates have been well above where they're putting the thresholds right now. But I think the good part about Denver or Colorado's laws, even though they are the highest in the nation, is that they are addressing a lot more than just this pickpocket of fast food or the restaurant style worker, because those are so many of the skilled jobs that are getting paid these like really low wages. So I don't know. I agree.
I agree, and I do believe the market should help people rise the wages up. We knew when we went into California, it's a very competitive labor market. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 years ago. So we always stayed ahead of the curve of the pay rate, but also the cell phone paying, the insurance kick in, all those other things that we think are much more important. I think more than a higher wage, giving people more time off is even a better thing. Or going to a 4-day work week. There's so many different ways to machinate this and make this a better soup. I don't like, especially in California, the food industry being discriminated against by a 10-panel board that's not an elected board, that's basically dictated by the governor, and they're focusing on one industry. It drives me nuts, because I can stand on my soapbox, because our stores always have paid higher than anybody else, and we won't be as affected by it. But I used to consult with McDonald's franchisees, and if they have to go up to $22 an hour, that's going to be brutal for some of their younger workers that aren't going to get jobs. Or McDonald's, everything's in McDonald's going to be made by a machine.
Can I ask, as a young brand growing, and you know, I think Chuck is very Californian, as I think many people think Californians are. Would you recommend a young brand going into a California?
No, absolutely not. We just had the opportunity to. With one of the brands we've been ideating, we had an investor meeting last week, and the big talk was, you know, states and where we want to orient ourselves and point ourselves. And I did a PowerPoint. I had a big red California saying no California. Just not right now. It's too... there's a lot going on in California, and I'm a Californian. I'm from Los Angeles, and I live in Connecticut now, up on a hill on an acre, and it's a very different vibe. So I'm in a little bit of a bubble, but I go back frequently on business, and I look at our businesses, and I look and see how well we're doing. But we're in very specific areas that we're killing it, but not everyone is. And I think with the labor, the rents, and the rents that your employees have to pay, the housing costs for executives, I don't think California is the friendliest place on earth right now. It makes me sad. It makes me sad. LA is a shithole, and San Diego is becoming a hellhole. And these areas are just not, they're not productive to like saying, because I love your brand, and I think your brand is very California. It's very helpful oriented. But I wouldn't go to Seattle right now. I wouldn't go to California right now. You know, a lot of people are going to the South and to the East and the Northeast. You can do the math why or why not. It's not political. It's more of like, I personally would not want to go to California.
That's why ego should be left at the door in running business.
Well, you gotta look at metrics and see how people are doing and see what you can do. And you know, I'm sure there's some great spots. You'd kill it in several cities in California right off the bat, because you'd still be unique and more helpful.
Right.
There's a lot more brands like our brand, like Asian Box and Chuck in California than most states. But you're still on that trend line of really cool, hip. I love your branding. I love the look and the feel of what you're doing. Your food looks beautiful. You're a very confident brand, but you know,
that's why we network.
Welcome.
That's why we do this.
Welcome to California. That's like what everybody says right now.
I feel like I should ask you more political questions, because you just don't hold back. It's awesome.
Well, you know, restaurateurs are printing up "Welcome to California" shirts and passing them around as jokes. You know what I mean? You know, they're wearing them in their restaurants. Going, "Welcome to California." Yeah, thank you, everyone. Yeah, I'm not. You can tell I'm not happy with the way California's being run, and it is not being run effectively. I don't think that's my personal opinion. It's not the opinion of any of my investors or my businesses or my brands, but I love California, and I love the music, love the Red Hot Chili Peppers and surfing, and just feeling good about eating healthy and food. And it's not so much in California anymore.
Yeah.
Doing that.
If a manager calls out, or an hourly calls out, just imagine somebody calling out sick.
Yeah.
And a manager has to cover it.
Yeah.
Do you do a different compensation for that manager if they end up going above that 50 hours, or is that just part of the, we'll get you next time?
No, we will. No, we don't say get you next time. It's a trade-off. Like, if a manager has to come in, then they within that same pay cycle, they get a freebie. They're not. We don't do that. And that's just in a very extreme circumstance.
Right.
Because then I think then that's abusing your staff. It's like, and you're penalizing them for something else. So I think the fish rots from the head down is my favorite Chinese proverb, and it really means it's meaningful in a fast casual shift. It's like, if you're a good manager, your staff will want to show up. If you're a good manager, the show will run smoothly. If you're a good manager, everything's going to go right to the bottom line so we can pay you more and take care of you more. Doesn't always work that way in everything, but I think four-day work weeks, I think giving people more time off, I think having reflections on store retreats, and we certainly close on major holidays. I mean, like, we always make sure July 4th, our managers, Christmas Eve noon, get to split even the day before, don't have to come back for 2 days after. We're always closed like at noon on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, day after Christmas. We're closed, for Rosh Hashanah and other holidays. Anybody can have time off for those holidays if they want and paid. And we're up closed on Memorial Day, July 4th. And I think that's one of the retention rate things we have with managers is that, again, I've gotten emails from parents that say, I cannot believe so-and-so was home the day before Thanksgiving, and the day after Thanksgiving. With their last job, they were flying in either the morning of on a red eye and leaving the next morning or the night of. And to me, that's more things that people should be looking at as an addition to compensation, because I think that creates this whole thread of culture that, you know what? I really get all the holidays off. I get more time with my family, especially if you're taking somebody that's been in the hospitality industry, doesn't have that.
Right.
You want to do that and take somebody from the hotel business that was in the hospitality business to hotels. I worked in hotels. I remember working 17 days straight one time, Thanksgiving through the week before Christmas. I mean, it's brutal. So if you take somebody from that and then you give them an offering of time off and mental health days and maybe half a day and get a dry clean and all the stuff for their laundry done, people stick around more. Yeah, it does. I look forward to seeing you guys expand, because I like the brand.
Well, I hate to break this up, but we're just at about time. So thank you guys so much for joining me today. It's been wonderful.